Hello and welcome to the Columbus Metropolitan Club on WCBE. Learn more about CMC's weekly events, broadcast, membership, and sponsorship at our website, columbusmetroclub.org, where you can register to participate in the live stream of our weekly Wednesday noon forums. Today's CMC Forum, Bridging the Digital Divide, was recorded on January 13, 2021. Speaking are Lieutenant Governor of the State of Ohio, John Husted, Vice President of Statewide Services for Ohio Electric Cooperatives, Doug Miller, Principal of Eastern Elementary in Meigs County, and mother of Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow, Robin Burrow, and our host, Report for America journalist at the Columbus Dispatch, Kaylee Doyle. Let's listen in.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kaylee. I'm looking forward to this conversation with our panelists. But first, I want to give you a little bit of background on me and my role and how I got interested in rural broadband from a journalist perspective. So I started at the Columbus Dispatch in June as our Report for America core member. Report for America is a national organization dedicated to eliminating news deserts throughout the country. They're in their third year, and I'm a part of the third iteration of these core members. And so there are hundreds of journalists across the country in TV, print, and radio who are working in roles similar to mine to help sort of stopgap these media deserts that we have across the U.S. So the Dispatch, which for many decades had a very storied state desk with dozens of reporters covering news across Ohio, rural and urban and suburban areas, was in need of someone, of a full-time reporter to cover Southeast in Appalachia, Ohio. Enter me. And full disclosure, I am, as many of a source has pointed out, a Flatlander, and a Flatlander from Chicago at that. But what struck me the most when I first started reporting in the region is the lack of broadband and the lack of internet access overall. And it's a really huge 21st century necessity, as we all know now, and the pandemic has certainly exacerbated a lot of issues that were pre-existing to begin with. And it's also, the number one issue that folks would bring up to me, whether that was teachers, bar owners, regional advocates, healthcare workers, they all said the same thing. Where's the internet? How can we get it? And maybe you should write about that. So I dug into that, and as our three panelists can tell you, a lack of access is a huge inhibitor to prosperity in Southeast Ohio. It's a huge issue when it comes to jobs, to access to health, medicine, education, and it's only been, exacerbated by COVID-19. So according to a study conducted by local regional council Buckeye Hills, right now there's more than 340,000 households without access, and that's approximately 1 million Ohioans who don't have the internet on a consistent or reliable regular basis. And so my reporting sort of unearthed, in addition to that, that there's a disconnect between the reports that telecommunication companies who provide this service filed to the FCC and the actual access folks on the ground really experience in a day-to-day way. So most rural Ohioans don't actually enjoy the kind of broadband that we have here in central Ohio and in Columbus. They're, experiencing anywhere between a step above dial-up to what the FCC standard definition for internet speeds is at 25.3 megabytes per upload or download. And to put that in perspective, it wouldn't even provide, internet service for a family of four who's watching Netflix or sending an email or also, trying to do Zoom with their colleagues. And if the state wanted to build out fiber optic broadband to every underserved household in Ohio, we'd need about a $2.3 billion investment to replace roughly 45,000 miles worth of decrepit copper cables that they have been basically lying around since, as Steve mentioned in his earlier remarks, since the Rural Electrification Act around 100 years ago at this point. So all of that is to say it's an incredibly complicated and nuanced issue. I'm extremely grateful for our panelists for being here today and to help us sort of walk through this problem and talk about some solutions that we're all hoping to one day achieve. So I will open it up to the panelists now, and I'll start with a simple question with Robin first. Why is internet access so important? And maybe walk us through how broadband, this issue, and the lack of access itself impacts your daily life.
Thank you, Kaylee. For us in the educational world, as everyone knows, with COVID, most all of our students are in some way, shape, or form experiencing at-home learning. And I'm sure many of us in this room and the audience as well are parents who have also are experiencing that and trying to work through all of those challenges. In Southeast Ohio and all of Appalachia, we certainly have more challenges. You know, we started back March with an abrupt closure of our school systems, of really the whole world shut down for a period of time. And as weeks passed, it became more and more apparent to us that we were going to have to figure out a way to educate, provide quality education to all of our students remotely. And we were hoping that it would only, you know, be for a short time. And now here we are nearly a year later with our district is blended. So we have students in the building 2 days a week and they're at home learning 3 days a week. So, you know, that's a very small percentage of their education that's been for nearly a year now that they've really gained quality education face-to-face. So that's a huge issue. We had the abrupt closure in March. We sent our students home. At that time, our district was not quite yet one-to-one. So even if students had access to internet, they didn't necessarily have devices that they could stream lessons. And most of them couldn't stream lessons anyway because of their internet access. So we also, as a district, really needed to, and as many districts in Appalachia throughout Ohio, we had to figure out who had access, who had devices, quickly in order to provide that quality education. And we got up and running as quickly as we could with online learning, but it also very quickly became apparent to us that probably a larger portion of our population did not have access. And we really needed to be able to connect with those kids because of not only education, but because we needed to know that they were okay. We needed to be able, if they were not participating in our education, just as though they would possibly be gone from school. If a child is gone for school more than 3 days in a row, I mean, we're going to find them, right? Well, now there were, you know, weeks on end that kids were not able to log in or were not logging in, and we needed to do well checks on those kids. So education, as well as just their well-being of their families and their access to information, was a huge problem. And so over the course of several months, we, all districts in Ohio, started to gather all of that information and started to be able to train our teachers, who also did not necessarily have access at home. So they were, once we could open our school buildings again to at least our personnel, we were getting them in to get them information, get them access to their remote trainings, to new additional software that we could provide to our students for learning. It was a very high hill to climb, and I know that all districts in really America had those same challenges. But for us, and in other areas in Appalachia, most of Appalachia, it was especially challenging because of the lack of broadband.
Doug or Lieutenant Governor, do either of you want to speak to that a little?
Sure. Well, you know, I grew up rural. I grew up in rural Ohio, although I grew up in rural northwest Ohio, where the topography is a little different than it is in southern Ohio. But when you think about it, you know, I look at the time that I grew up. Even though we were rural and we lived a long way from any city, I lived 60 miles from Toledo. That was the closest city. You only had telephones, radio, and television. And while you may have to do some funky things with your TV antenna to get the signal, you could get the same access to information that anybody in an urban area had. But that's not the same today. Today, the disparity, we talk about economic disparity. Well, one of the components of economic disparity is access to the internet. Because if you don't have access to the internet, which many rural folks don't, and you have three areas. A, I don't have access. I couldn't buy it if I wanted to. B, I can buy it, but it's so poor quality that it doesn't really do what I need it to do. Like, if you have a brother and a sister trying to go to school at the same time, they can't get on Zoom calls because their internet's not good enough, even if they have it. And then you can't afford it. You have all of these components of access that fall into it. And you can't participate in the modern economy, the modern education system, the modern healthcare system without it. When we talk about education, which is certainly a big component of this, but if you wanted to telework, if you wanted to do a Zoom call, as a lot of people I'm sure who are watching this today are accustomed to, if you live in many geographic locations in the state, you don't have that access. And you're not, you know, you're not able to participate in e-commerce to the extent you're not able to work and do remote activity, not to mention educationally, and not to mention healthcare. You may have mental health issues. You may be recovering from addiction. You may have a lot of these things that you need that access. You don't have it. And so building that infrastructure and that access is incredibly important to bridging the overall goal of the economic and social divides that exist in our society today. This is also an urban problem as well as a rural problem. But that's why this is important. That's why we have to care about that. That's why I'm here today talking about this topic, because I feel it's so important. And you know, I just want to set the stage with those thoughts about how, you know, before we get into solutions, how important it is that we actually have a complete recognition in society. Because look, I understand if you live in a suburban community and you have great access, this is not an issue to you, all right? You take it for granted. Imagine that you had none of that. Just, I ask you, look, we have people that can't put down their phones for 5 minutes. Imagine you didn't have access to, just do it for a day. If you don't believe me that this is a real issue, try to do it for one day and you realize what divides do exist.
Yeah. Thank you both for kind of raising, you know, the issue. And from my perspective and from our members' perspectives, broadband has been an issue for some time, and we're glad to see that it is now getting the attention that it deserves and needs. And Kaylee, you framed up the issue very well. Of the 24 million households in rural America, 80% of them are rural, served by electric cooperatives that don't have affordable access to broadband. And it does impact, as Lieutenant Governor mentioned and Mrs. Burrow mentioned, it impacts education, healthcare, economic growth, health and safety. There's just so many areas that the internet has an impact on. And, you know, from an electric cooperative standpoint, stifling economic growth is really a challenge. So I do a lot of strategic planning for several of our cooperatives, and one of the issues that they raise with me is that, you know, rural areas, we're not growing. We're not adding new consumers. We're actually contracting. Many cooperatives are serving fewer consumers today than they were years ago, and broadband access is going to be a leading cause of that down the road. I think about, you raised the question from an education standpoint, you have a family of four. Mom or dad has to now work from home. Kids are learning from home, and you have this contracted bandwidth internet connection that really makes it a challenge. I know my personal story for quality broadband. I live in the Indian Lake region. I wouldn't call it necessarily completely rural, but it is somewhat rural. The only access that I have to internet is through a digital subscriber line, a DSL line, that at the beginning of the pandemic was a 15 megabit connection, and I could not do a video conference call from my house. So, you know, what I have to do, then I have to go into the office, then increase my exposure to other health and safety concerns. So it is a consideration, you know, for a family and for people to whether they're to locate their home or their business in a rural area, and it shouldn't be. I mean, it really should be, we should have equal access no matter where you want to locate. There are a couple other stories. We have an employee, one of our government affairs folks whose father was going through some significant health challenges, needed to attend a doctor's appointment at the Cleveland Health Clinic. His doctor was up there, or her doctor. They tried to do an internet-based teledoc type call. didn't have a quality internet connection, so she ended up having to drive him to the Cleveland Clinic, a 2.5-hour drive each way, so he could see his doctor. That's the kind of challenges that we experience in rural Ohio. And from an operational standpoint, the 24 electric cooperatives in Ohio, we provide electricity in 77 of the 88 counties. So this is definitely a Southeast Ohio issue, but it is a rural Ohio issue in all 77 of those 88 counties. And by the way, we serve in some of the toughest terrain that you can imagine. On average, about 8 consumers per mile of line. And so it makes the economics of extending broadband even more challenging. But and then you throw in, we have one cooperative in Guernsey County that during the pandemic wanted to implement remote work, wanted to have their employees work from home, but their employees don't have high-speed internet access from home to be able to do that. So now we've putting our employees at risk by not having that available to them. So thank you for raising the issue, and it's an honor to be on this panel with these distinguished guests. Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. Lieutenant Governor, I know we've had a few conversations at this point about how one of yours and Governor DeWine's major concerns is addressing the connectivity issue. So I'm wondering if you could sort of walk us through a few of the different solutions that we've discussed before and different technologies you guys are pursuing, as well as what you think the state's responsibility and role should be in addressing this problem.
Thank you. And Governor DeWine and I, we had a good conversation about this yesterday. It's important to understand what problem you're trying to solve, because some cases it's an affordability issue. Some cases it's an access issue. Some solutions work better than others because you have topography differences. Let me just discuss a few of them that I have hope in and that I believe have promise. First of all, let's talk about Starlink. Starlink is low-level satellite connectivity to the internet. You may say, "Well, we've had satellites for a while." Well, this is the SpaceX lower level satellite, high speed internet project that is in the pilot phase right now. And we worked very aggressively to see if we could do this pilot with Starlink. We have one going on in a rural area outside of Marysville right now, where we have about 90 families and businesses who are part of this pilot project. We want to do a test case with it. Does this technology work? Because if it does work, it can really help solve some of the topography, the ones where it's going to be really hard to get a signal or to run wires to those locations. So if that works, it has great promise. But we're trying to be aggressive in getting that effort started in Ohio. I just came back from a project that we were working on in DeGraff, Ohio, at Riverside Schools, which is in Logan County, outside of Bell Fountain, where they took, because we knew that this was a problem, so Governor DeWine and I put forward $50 million of the CARES Act money for schools to do demonstration or to get hotspots and Wi-Fi out there for kids during the pandemic. But I remember when we did that, I remember thinking, this is just temporary. This is taking that money and it's putting them in to solving, but this is not a permanent solution. And fortunately, Riverside Schools worked with our Innovate Ohio team, our broadband team, Ornette, and a bunch of partners on this. And they now have a signal on their football stadium that will transmit a mile and a half out to all of their communities. It includes, now they have 600 business and residential customers, all serving the students and in that community. And they did it. It was a $171,000 investment to get that out. And they're going to give, and it's going to be $15 a month for high speed internet service, 50 megabit download, 10 megabit up. There we go. Easy for me to say, right? And then you can do, you ultimately can install transmitters to take that every mile and a half and continue to build out on that. This works well because of the topography there. It's a lot easier to do it in this part of rural Ohio than it would be when you get into some serious issues with topography. But it has a lot of potential. And then also we announced yesterday with Southern Ohio Communication Service in Pike, Scioto, and Adams County, subsidy. Basically, remember all this. Most of this is private sector done. You know, this is the private sector does it. You buy this service. Well, the private sector is not going to do it if they can't make money off of it. And we all understand that. You're not, you can't afford to do it if you don't. So you have to find some of these internet services providers to give them some of the upfront money to finance the cost to make this possible. We've done some things with rural electric co-ops, Buckeye Rural, and some others. So they're a patchwork of these kinds of things to try to make it work that I think have potential. Also, leveraging state assets, our rights of ways, our towers, anything that's a state asset, helping to make those resources available to the private sector, not for profits. I left out, by the way. I feel bad for doing this. PCs for People, which is the primary not-for-profit sponsor with the project that I talked about in Riverside. If you're interested in this topic, PCs for People, we think, is an example of one of our great partners that can help expand this in a affordable way to a lot of people around the state. But it's going to take, it's like a quilt. It's a patch here. It's a patch there. There's not one solution for everything, but we have to invest in all of these kinds of different solutions at solving the problem.
Sure. That makes me curious, Doug, from your perspective with the rural co-ops. I mean, hearing about this low-level satellite technology and sort of this being more of a patchwork quilt type approach, in my research and in stories that I've written now about broadband, I think a lot of other folks in Appalachia, I know in Tennessee, they've built out a whole infrastructure based on rural co-ops providing fiber optic broadband. Is that something that's feasible for Ohio, or how do you see, Ohio's electric co-ops playing in that role?
Yeah, the Lieutenant Governor brought up three things that I think are make that a little bit of a challenge. One is cost, two is technology developments, and three is the affordability piece. So we have 24 electric cooperatives in the state of Ohio. They've all have looked at infrastructure deployment and have looked at the cost. But we hear quite often that, you did this in the 1930s, right? So there was no access for electricity in rural America, rural Ohio, and you did it, and it's just the same as it was back in the 1930s. Well, again, we just identified two new technologies that if you build out this very costly infrastructure that would maybe, trump a very expensive deployment of fiber to the home. And so our cooperatives are proceeding very cautiously. They're studying. We are not-for-profit electric utility companies. We're owned by the members we serve. So the equity that we have is our members' equity. And so we have to be very cautious about how we leverage that to expand into these new businesses, and particularly with broadband. So I do think there's a role electric cooperatives can play, and we're very anxious to be part of the solution. However, it is something that we're proceeding very cautiously with at this point.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, Bridging the Digital Divide. Speaking are Lieutenant Governor of the State of Ohio, John Houston, Vice President of Statewide Services for Ohio Electric Cooperatives, Doug Miller, Principal of Eastern Elementary in Meigs County, and mother of Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow, Robin Burrow, and our host, Report for America journalist at the Columbus Dispatch, Kaylee Doyle. On WCBE 90.5 FM Columbus, 106.3 FM Newark, streaming online at WCBE.org, a broadcast service of Columbus City Schools. We'll return to the conversation after a short break.
Hey, this is Mike Foley. I recently donated my 2005 Saturn View to WCBE through the Vehicle Donation Program. It hit me harder than I expected because of all the memories of taking kids to school, practices, or games in that vehicle. Those dates my wife and I had when we actually had the time and energy to go out. Anyway, donating that car to WCBE gave my family one more lasting memory because it's helping 90.5 deliver news, music, and a listening experience that's genuine and unique. If it's time to part with your car, donate it to WCBE.
Find out more by clicking on the Support WCBE tab at wcbe.org.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, Bridging the Digital Divide. Let's get back to the conversation.
Robin, from your perspective as an educator, just listening to a lot of these stopgaps, I mean, as Lieutenant Governor Husted mentioned, and that we've been following, I mean, you guys allocated, you know, $50 million in CARES Act money for these education, you know, grants. I mean, working on a variety of different solutions here. You know, is this private-public partnership, is that the best we can do from someone who's, you know, working and living on the ground in this area? Or are you looking for a greater collaboration from the federal government, something akin, you know, to a New Deal-esque kind of mandate that would, in the same way that the TVA, you know, electrified rural America back in the day, that would also sort of bring broadband and bring the rest of Appalachia into the 21st century?
Was that a question for Robin?
Go ahead, Robin. Robin first, maybe, yeah. Then you, Doug. No, you, yeah,
please. I'll go first, and
yes,
then.
Please.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
You were looking at me.
So first of all, I'd like to take just a second to thank the Lieutenant Governor, because the CARES money and for the match waiver for our school systems, that was a huge step forward.
And we waived the waiver because of the things that you told us you needed. So,
well, and we appreciate
you
that very much.
That
I know the Appalachian Children's Coalition was a part of that communication, and we appreciate that very much. It allowed many school districts throughout the state to be able to reallocate money and use it for other things. So thank you for that. And I think that there's no way that we could possibly find a solution without some help from the federal government. It's a huge financial undertaking. It's going to have to be a partnership between both private and public sector in order to find a real solution and for us to partner together to have actionable steps to solve the problem. It's going to take people from lots of different entities across America and from the federal government. Absolutely. I would like to say that I know that in our school district we used much of our CARES money and different monies that were allocated for MiFi White hotspots, and that helped many of our students and many of our families. However, at the same time, those hotspots needed cell service, and in our area of the country, cell service is very sketchy. So unfortunately, some of the hotspots that we distributed, the families had to bring back, and we redistributed them to other people to see if they could find a good enough signal for those hotspots to work. We also used some of that money to buy smart bus devices so that the bus would be a hotspot. For us personally, in our district, rather than using the buses, we put them in little churches throughout our district so that it was a little bit more a permanent spot for people to be able to go to those parking lots and be able to upload the documents that they needed. Then the kiddos and the families would go home and work, and then they would come back to be able to download their work. I think you guys have talked about that they're patches, they're little Band-Aids. It's a little surface solution to a huge, deep wound that is affecting a million people in Appalachia. And I think that the conversation has started and solutions are being investigated. And I think that we need to continue to keep our families and our children of our rural communities at the forefront and make sure that we're meeting their needs so that we can bridge those deficiencies and those disparities between our urban and suburban populations and those who choose to live in rural areas.
Doug or Lieutenant Governor, did you want to tackle that?
First of all, I apologize for interrupting you. absolutely. You know, the short answer, you know, do we need some government assistance to help fund these projects? Absolutely. There have been a number of efforts to do that. I think, you know, the CARES Act funding, the Rural Digital Opportunity Fund, RDOF auction, CAF auctions, state programs, certainly local investments from our utility companies to be able to do that. But the reality of the world is for electric cooperatives in rural areas, we serve an average of 8 consumers for every mile of line. So over a mile of line, on average, 8 consumers. You go down to Adams County in southeast Ohio, that's more like 3 to 4, okay? So now you start running the numbers in terms of collecting, you know, what is it, $50 a month or $70 a month for a fiber connection to the home. The business plan just doesn't work, and that's why it hasn't been done to this point. And so we're going to need some sort of help or some sort of technology solution to be able to get that done. We talk a little bit about, you know, public-private partnerships, I think, and public-public partnerships. We have one electric cooperative in southwest Ohio that has partnered with a larger regional telephone company to be able to bring broadband to the members of that electric cooperative. We have another cooperative up in northwest Ohio that's partnered with a local ISP. Not necessarily, they haven't brought broadband yet, but they're putting in infrastructure to be able to have the capacity to do that down the road. Just read a report from our counterparts in Georgia about three different case studies of where a telephone company, like even kind of an independent telephone company and the local electric cooperative have partnered, or even larger for-profit telephone companies. So we need to start having those kind of conversations to be able to bring people together to get this done. And I'm glad the lieutenant governor has made this a mission and a passion of his, and we really appreciate it to bring this, you know, put this on the radar for all of Ohio. So appreciate it.
So two points: one on the economics of it, and one on the federal funding. So I think it's important. I often get the question of, like, why don't you just solve it? It's like, well, it costs a lot of money, And when you talk to a private provider, they will say, on average, it costs around $60,000 a mile for broadband, okay? Well, once you get down into rural areas, you know, the project we just worked on yesterday that we're doing in Pike, Scioto, and Adams County that we helped support, that's going to be 64 miles. It's going to serve 1,300 residential and business customers. But when you think about that, that's 21 customers a mile. Okay? Now, A, to make that work, the companies will tell you, well, we need to recover our capital costs, our CapEx, in 7 years, or we won't invest the money. And if we don't recover it in 7 years, so you not only have 21 in a mile, but they also have to purchase it and pay for it. And if you run into categories of people, if the cost is too high and people can't pay for it, it's complicated in making the economics of that work, okay? So that's the challenge, the numbers challenge, just in general. There's no two situations that are exactly the same. But I was hopeful that we would get it. I mean, for a fraction of the money that the CARES Act, or that all of the $3 trillion we've spent on COVID, we could have solved this problem, okay? But the latest round of funding that was out there, the vast majority of it went directly to the private sector providers, okay? It didn't come to us. It went to them. We don't know the rules around it yet. But I hope that there is an obligation, and I'm going to talk with all of these private sector providers about this that operate in Ohio, that they use that money not to expand 5G in places where they already have it, but to use it to expand 4G, which the cost of that has come down a lot now that we have 5G, into the places that don't have it. And I hope that is how that large amount of federal funding that's gone out in the most recent relief program is invested, because it will be a missed opportunity if it's not.
Lieutenant Governor, I'm glad to hear you say that. That is obviously a concern of ours as well, is holding the recipients of this RDOF auction money accountable over that period of time, the 5 or 6 years that they've promised to deploy broadband. So we're going to be watching that too, and we're glad it's on your radar.
Yeah, and I don't understand. I get it. If you're in the private sector, you have an obligation to your shareholders and to your employees to make money and not go out of business. So they have mm-hmm. jobs and your customers have service. But when you're talking about putting federal money in it, you're talking about taxpayer money, that has a more global, you have more of a global responsibility to serve the underserved with those dollars.
We're going to be moving to the questions from the audience in just a couple of minutes. So I'll throw out a final question from me to you all, and then we can sort of move over and piggyback over to folks who are watching the live stream. But I guess something I'd like to address or talk about a little bit, backpedaling here, is House Bill 13. That was a big piece of state legislation that was going to, you know, provide $20 million, which, as we've all just discussed, doesn't seem like a ton of money in the grand scheme of things, but, you know, a solid amount, of dollars that could go towards helping these folks in the private sector as well as the electric co-ops. I know we're going to be open to getting that money and, you know, expanding access. It passed in June in the House. It was up for deliberation in the Senate, and then ultimately they didn't do anything with it. So I know a lot of folks were kind of like, what gives? Like, why isn't this happening in a more concentrated effort from, you know, the state house when a lot of these representatives do, you know, have constituents in rural areas? So I'm curious just, you know, how you felt, the three of you, how that sort of news, came down to you. And then also, you know, what pressure should we be putting on our representatives in Ohio right now to make this a greater priority? And obviously, you know, we have that coming from the top at the state with you, Lieutenant Governor, and Governor DeWine, but how do we get everyone more on the same page?
Well, you want me to start, or you want to?
You
start from the grassroots, Robin. You tell them what you think, and then I'll finish.
Okay. So certainly there is a high level of frustration about House Bill 13. I think that, to me, everything seems very disjointed, I guess, a little bit. And there are so many different pieces and parts that have, and it's complicated. So there are experts here and experts here and experts here. And I feel like we need to gain a network of people who have the same focused goal of expanding broadband and finding, again, actionable steps that we can move to find an answer in a reasonable amount of time. It's very complicated, and we have a level of infrastructure through the rural cooperatives, but they don't have the fibers, the right kinds of wires to make it happen. We have lots of other technology coming that's being investigated that might be the answer in other places, and somehow we need to bring people together who can work together to find the solution and find, first of all, find the actionable steps, and second of all, to find the solutions.
Well, I'll just, House Bill 16 or House Bill 13 of the old General Assembly absolutely should have been passed. We have a lot of legislators who will talk about the fact that their constituents aren't being served, but then they left without doing this, and they know that they should have. And so we'll be back at the beginning of this General Assembly with the same or even more in that package, because we need some of the relief. There's even just some language in there to make it a little more easy for rural co-ops to do this and know that they have the legal authority to do it. Just things like that that were important elements of that bill. But you have to have a grant program, and I'm going to come back to the economics piece again. Because let's just say that it costs you $60,000, but, you know, hey, if you could subsidize even $10,000 of that mile, we could afford to do it then. That's why you need a grant program. You need a grant program to subsidize to make the economics of these things work for urban and rural Ohio. And that's why you need something like a House Bill 13, so the state can have a grant program to assist in the areas where they're just a little short. They just need a little boost to get there, and I think that can lead to an expansion to lots of people in the state.
All right, so we are going to transition over to our audience questions. Jane Scott of CMC is curating questions from the live stream. So, we would thank you to avoid any editorial comments. But Jane, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. And we do have a lot of editorial comments, believe me. So, and there are a lot of duplicate questions, so my apologies to folks who ask questions. We're going to kind of consolidate them. There's clearly a lot of interest in the federal government's role in this. Steve Cook from Osborne Engineering, I guess, uses the word that encapsulates that. Does the state of Ohio anticipate federal support of rural broadband initiatives from the new administration?
Yes, we do. We've already been in communication with the Biden administration about the importance of this and how we're willing to work with them on these programs. We were in conversation with the Trump administration on this. We'll be in conversation with anybody who wants to be in conversation with us about how they will help us knock down the barriers, find the resources, and allocate, distribute those resources to where the problem really is. When you have federal money, any government money out there, free money as we'll call it, for people, they want to capture it and they want to do what they want to do with it. We need to make sure that it gets spent where it's needed, to prioritize that, to leverage more private sector dollars with that money to get more investment. If we do that, we'll solve the problem more quickly.
And I guess I have a follow-up question to that. Is there a coordinated effort? Who's in charge?
Well, we have a Office of Broadband that we established. Governor DeWine established the Office of Broadband. I'll say his name, Peter Vodeberg. Peter Vodeberg runs it. We put a statewide strategic plan together. We work to make sure we had the maps to know where the needs were. I mean, we have maps that show where you have no access, poor access, great access, so that people can be informed about where those investments are needed. We're in conversation with the private sector internet service providers. We're in conversations with schools, with not-for-profits, and the Office of Broadband in Ohio is the coordinating location for that effort.
Great. One member has a question. Why was this not taken into consideration before the pandemic? I believe this disconnect is not just because of COVID. So, in other words, what was happening before?
I can tell you, you know, I've been in this job for now, I guess, about 2 years, and it was a priority coming in. We did at the very beginning. I made plenty of people mad about this because a lot of the big companies that went to Capitol Hill and testified and said, hey, we want to help, you know, people out there who don't have access. And then we ask them to help and they wouldn't help. And so we said, fine, we're going to do an RFQ. We're going to ask questions. We're going to get your answers back about how you're willing to help. We use that to build that strategic plan. So this was in place before COVID. It's just COVID lit a fire under it. COVID exposed what already existed, mm-hmm. that we had so many people that didn't have access. But now when people started to realize that it's school children who had to go remote, it's for moms and dads who it's like, hey, I need you to go work remote. It's like, I can't work remote. I don't have access. I think that helped raise the consciousness to many people who have that access and just take it for granted. They think everybody does. They don't. We now know. And it's you know, it's gotten people's attention.
Great. Pina McCray asks, when is the SpaceX Starlink high-speed internet access system scheduled for statewide availability in Ohio? And I guess the next piece of that, is there other technology that is beginning to surface because COVID has lit a fire under such a critical need?
The Starlink pilot project, Starlink won't comment on it because, I mean, they've kept this very quiet. I encourage you, if you're interested in it, go and search it. If you have internet access, you can search this project and see just the amazing number of satellites that are up there now that they're building. And you understand you can only get it in the northern hemisphere, the uppermost reaches of the northern hemisphere as they build out that satellite. But we're now at a place where we can test it in Ohio. We don't know if it will work, and we don't know if it won't. The pilot is underway. We're getting people the hardware that they need to do this, and over the course of the next few months, we'll get their feedback to see if it works. You know, can dad be on a Zoom call, and can the two kids, is it good enough that everybody, you know, one person's watching TV, two are on Zoom calls, the other one's trying to do homework, and is it that kind of quality? And if it is, I think it has great potential. The Internet of Things, there's a whole other kind of small satellite technology that's being developed to track everything from cars to wildlife, you name it. The technology is growing, but we're talking about Starlink is really geared toward that residential business customer.
Mm-hmm. Robin, this one might be good for you. Carol McGuire asks, what are businesses currently doing in rural areas?
That's a good question, because I think I know remotely or in our rural area, in our remote rural area, for the most part, our fire departments and our small businesses there close to our school district, our fire department has a hotspot so that they can continue to provide services, obviously. But, I mean, it's not like they have online services. You can't order your groceries from a rural little grocery store. You know, people are forced to go in. So they're driving. People are driving to more urban areas to be able to utilize those services. Otherwise, with COVID, people are being, honestly, they're being exposed potentially. So there's a huge gap there.
So, Doug, you know I'm familiar with the cooperative story. In the 1930s, the Rural Electrification Act was a model that had really not been used before. Cooperatives were becoming available for lots of services for rural America. Maybe not the exact technology, but certainly the model for the funding and the infrastructure of the cooperatives themselves are already there. Are your folks working at the federal level to try to push some sort of a reboot of the Rural Electrification Act?
Yeah. I don't know that we're trying to reboot the Rural Electrification Act. I do think we are, lobbying for federal financial assistance to be able to do this. As you point out, we do have a lot of infrastructure in place. And I would say there's a couple things that electric cooperatives are doing and can do to help foster broadband deployment. I think first of all, let me just make this point. Our first concern is to make sure that our members get equal access to broadband. There are some cooperatives that are actually going into the business themselves. There are others that are partnering. There are others that are kind of sitting on the sidelines, kind of waiting to see what happens. I look at our electric cooperatives as that kind of that provider of last resort, I guess. So for the last 80 years, we have done electricity. We're really good at doing electricity. Fiber and telecom, we're not experts in that field. So it really would be beneficial, to partner with somebody to be able to do that. But there are a couple things. One is we do have poles and wires that run across the countryside, and those are available for telecom and cable TV providers to attach to be able to extend broadband. I think the other thing is many of our cooperatives are building fiber loops to connect all of their substations so they can bring data back on their electric distribution system. They can have video cameras to kind of monitor the security and safety of those facilities. But when they're doing that, they're adding the capacity to be able to partner with an ISP to utilize or to partner with them on that infrastructure to deploy broadband. So there are a number of things that we can do. The model in 1930 served as a good example. But again, it's a very competitive business.
So there's been a number of questions about not only the need for education, but certainly for telemedicine. And as rural hospitals are fewer and farther between, and your story about going 2.5 hours one way, is there anything happening from different funding sources, not just for education, but also for medicine and healthcare, that maybe could be part of this solution?
Yeah, I will remember we had a news conference on this where we had the superintendent from the Switzerland of Ohio Schools, which is in Monroe County. I imagine most people haven't been to Monroe County. It's one of the most rural places in Ohio. They had, and we used some resources to set up a telehealth pilot program for the school system. You say, why? Well, they either some of these schools are literally 30, 45 minutes, the buildings, physically distant from one another. And the counselors, sometimes if there was an emergency, would have to drive, you know, a considerable amount of time, or you might not even be able to find them because they didn't have a cell signal. And so we built the infrastructure to do a telehealth pilot in Monroe County. The reason you probably haven't heard of it, maybe, is because the day we announced it was the day the first case of COVID hit in Ohio. And so that was the news. Kaylee, we couldn't outdo the telehealth pilot in Monroe County didn't exceed the newsworthiness of that story, and so it was hard to explain it. But since then, we've built the template for how you can do a telehealth program and get the capacity increased in that community. So if there's anybody out there that's interested in how you can expand a telehealth pilot in rural Ohio, we have the template built. We'll work with the schools. We're working with the healthcare providers to continue to do that. That's one way that you can subsidize some of that infrastructure that also can be used by people in other parts of the community.
This is our last question. Lainey Cuthbert asks, are there best practices in place in other rural areas around the country that Ohio could borrow and learn from?
I'll take the first crack at that. I think absolutely. I'm looking at this report that I got from Georgia, you know, three public-private partnerships to expand broadband. I think, you know, House Bill 13 can serve is kind of on the heels of what has been done in Indiana, done in Mississippi, you know, and other places where additional funding from the state, a state plan has been put together so we can leverage that to tap into other federal resources. So there are definitely models out there that work and that we can learn from to bring broadband to our members.
I will add just quickly. One of the things Ohio has that other places don't is we have ORNET, which connects all of our public institutions, libraries, and schools. It's great. It's a great asset. And I hope that what we announced today at the Riverside Schools out there in Logan County can be an Ohio practice that we export to the rest of the country, because I think it has that much promise.
That concludes today's show. You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, Bridging the Digital Divide, recorded on January 13, 2021. Speaking were Lieutenant Governor of the State of Ohio, John Husted, Vice President of Statewide Services for Ohio Electric Cooperatives, Doug Miller, Principal of Eastern Elementary in Meigs County, and mother of Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow, Robin Burrow, and our host, Report for America journalist at the Columbus Dispatch, Kaylee Doyle. More information about today's speakers, this and other forums, membership in the Columbus Metropolitan Club, and our weekly noon Wednesday livestream events is available on our website at columbusmetroclub.org, where you can register to participate in the live stream. The Columbus Metropolitan Club, connecting people and ideas through community conversation. Thanks for listening.